all in 14-room farmhouse. It's all single, all on one level, and every room is peppered with doors and windows. No windows have burglar bars. They're all big double windows, as we do in that climate. The main bedroom, where I understand he may have finally been found, I know has three exit doors just from that one bedroom alone, plus four double windows. So it seemed to me improbable that anybody could be trapped in such an open home. Asbestos, as everybody knows, is fireproof, and the roof was made of asbestos sheeting. It was commonly used in southern Africa in the 50s, even into the 60s. Asbestos sheeting was a cheap and easy roofing material, completely fireproof. The walls of the whole house were made of fired brick and cement, so they are completely fireproof. The ceilings and roofing timbers would have been able to be burned, but the fire couldn't spread quickly through those ceilings and roofing timbers without the walls and the roof burning, and the walls and roof could not burn. So it was a pretty safe house from the point of fire.
It's reported his body was burnt to ashes, and now questions are being asked about how this could have happened, especially to that extent, without people coming to his aid. Can you tell us about the surrounding area? Was the house within view?
Assuming that that the layout was fairly similar to when we were there, and no major changes had been made, then the front gate to the property is 40 meters from the house at the most, and there's a back gate to the property, equally about 40 meters. So the gates were there. There's a lot of buildings around. There are in the main complex of buildings, sheds and barns, the main farming complex, there was the main house, which was our house, which is where Mojuru died. And there were three other houses. Presumably, those houses remain occupied. And then just a couple of hundred yards back, there was an entire village of where the farm personnel lived, a whole village of some 80 to 100 houses. And I find it implausible, shall I use that word, that there could have been a major fire in the main house, and nobody saw it. That seems very implausible. I mean, there are plenty of people around.
Can you tell us a bit about the eviction itself? I understand that you were only given 1 hour to vacate the property.
Yes, it was 11 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, and we were visited by three people, one of whom I already knew. His name was Comrade Zhou. Comrade Zhou worked for General Mojuru during the War of Liberation. He then became a colonel in the 5th Brigade, implicated, I believe, in some atrocities in Matabeleland. Then he worked for Mojuru in Mashonaland East during the 1990s and early 2000s. They arrived in mid-morning. They were clearly armed, and they told my wife, myself, to leave the farm. I said, look, let's sit down, have a cup of tea and talk about this. Let's not be hasty. Comrade Jules said to me, look, you are not listening to me. We said, you go, and you go now. We don't want to happen here as happened to Mr. Dunn, who was our great friend and neighbor who had recently been murdered. So we took the threat pretty seriously. We took some clothes and some photographs, and we left. We never went back into that house again. The next 3 months we spent in Harare trying to negotiate our way back to the farm. And throughout that period, Mojuru pretended to me that he was not behind the eviction, that it might be somebody else, and that he might be able to help me through that period. So I established a relationship with him for the next 3 months based on trickery on his part. He persuaded me to continue farming to continue fertilizing the crops, to irrigate the tobacco, and to get the necessary inputs onto the farm. I continued farming through my managers without being allowed to go to the farm myself, but encouraged to do so by Mjulu, never suspecting that he was behind it. When it became clear that he was behind it, and I was issued with very serious threats to my life and that of my family, we left the country quickly on legal advice, and it was the only thing we could do.
How big was the farm, and were you able to later on reclaim some of your property?
No. The farm was 1,300 hectares, and we were not able to take anything off the farm. We got a court's order to enable us to remove our movable assets, being tractors and vehicles, irrigation equipment, cattle, game, stocks of valuable fertilizers, chemicals, and so, fuel, and so forth. So we organized in the light of the court case in our favor, instructing us to remove our movable assets from the farm. We sent agents to the farm with trucks, accompanied by the sheriff of the High Court. They were driven off the farm by Comrade Jaw in a very violent way. The sheriff's car was actually manhandled. It was picked up and turned around and faced in the direction from which it had come. And they were all told, the drivers of the trucks and the sheriff were told, that if they came back, they would be killed. So they never came back. We never got any of our assets off the farm. Nothing. None of the cattle, 460 head of pedigree breeding stock, 600 head of game, everything from giraffe to eland, sable, zebra, commercial game herds. None of that came off the farm, neither any of our vehicles or tractors and equipment, not to mention the crop in the ground. We had 85 hectares of irrigated tobacco, which was at reaping stage. It had been grown through, you know, fully grown and ready to reap. So, the investment in that 85-hectare crop was 95% done. We didn't get anything off, Violet.
How much did you lose?
When I first went to court about it and did the sums, I estimated the movable assets, not the farm, and not the buildings, dams, and so forth, which are fixed improvements. The movable assets, which we could have taken off in trucks, I estimated that at $2.5 million at the time. But for the court, we had professional valuation by the premier agricultural valuation company in the country, a firm known as Redfern Mullet. They valued those movable assets at $1.7 million. So that's the figure that was accepted, that has been accepted legally, $1.7 million.
And so what are you going to do now as General Mjulu is no longer there?
We're not actively trying to get the farm back at this stage. It's gone beyond that point with 4,000 farms having been acquired. We have been trying to get compensation from General Mjulu personally for the movable assets which he stole from us, which we were forced to leave behind. That $1.7 million US, we have been suing him in the civil court for that. Now that he has died, I need to take legal advice. Do we continue to with the court action against his estate? I'm not sure what the legal position is going to be now. I need to get advice on that. As far as the land goes, that's a different issue, which has been dealt with by the Commercial Farmers Union in negotiation with the government and donor agencies and foreign governments. It's a political issue, the land. The movable assets was between me and General Mjulu.
Many are mourning the death of General Mjulu, who was a decorated liberation hero, and many say he was a people person. In your dealings with him, what sort of a person was he like?
I actually enjoyed talking to him. He was a very quiet man, a big guy, but quiet, clearly intelligent. He had a huge amount of experience, and he was happy to talk. He was quite a storyteller in a quiet way. I met him many times and spoke with him and listened to him with a lot of interest. So he was an impressive guy. Yes, he was also leader of the Zanla forces in the War of Liberation and responsible for bringing Mugabe to power. I mean, you know, he was a seriously important liberation hero, and I don't take that away from him. Trouble is that after independence, he also became a very serious businessman, and he had the reputation. I can't vouch for it, but he had the reputation of also being the biggest businessman and the richest person in the country. Diamonds, farming, and goodness knows what else, but he was regarded as the richest person in the country. I think there was an enormous amount of wealth there. So there were two sides to his personality. He was a liberation hero and a very, very, very shrewd, rich businessman.
What do you think could have happened to him? What's your reaction to his death?
I just cannot imagine the circumstances for a natural death by being trapped in a fire. It's hard to believe because I know the house so well. You know, anyone can walk out of any of those doors. They don't appear to have been barred. There were no burglar bars on the windows. So I suspect that something happened to him and the house and he were burned to destroy evidence. Probably that evidence will never come out. But it seems to me that there's some very funny business going on there. My immediate reaction was one of shock and surprise. He was one of the two main contenders, one of the two main sort of presidential challengers, him and Mnangagwa. So it really did come as a surprise and a shock. And my first reaction is that if it generates publicity, you know, I hope it's good publicity in the sense that I hope it increases the awareness of people around the world and in the corridors that matter, that there are huge injustices to be addressed in Zimbabwe, particularly with regard to law and order and property rights. With those two elements in place, I feel that, you know, Zimbabwe can flourish again and we can all go home. So that's my immediate reaction. I hope it leads to some good.